listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow.
This is Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly.
Hello and good evening. Welcome to Empower the Spirit for Sunday, September 25th, 2011. My name is Doug Kelly, and he's glad to have you, and so am I. We'll talk about dual personalities later. Empower the Spirit is a weekly broadcast of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. It's part of our regular church services. It's our mission to explore and empower the human spirit. We welcome those who are listening to this live broadcast, as well as those who are listening to the archive. Now, tonight, we've got several things going on. My topic tonight is achieving transpersonal self-confidence. We're going to talk about that and explain it a little bit. And tonight, we've got a new weekly feature beginning, Living Free with Camille Edwards. She will be, it'll be a short segment. She'll be talking about various things with a focus on herbology. And then, of course, we have Dr. Vicki's Psychic Perspective. And that'll be following my program and then the Living Free segment. And Dr. Vicki will take your calls. If you'd like to call in as usual, take your questions. Of course, you can ask them in the chat room as well. If you'd like to call in during the segments tonight, you can. The number is there on your screen, 714-459-3973. Reverend John Hightower will be screening your calls. And I think I've covered all the beginning stuff. So let's talk about achieving transpersonal self-confidence. And of course, you might be thinking, well, okay, well, what does that mean? Then I'll explain. Self-confidence essentially means belief in yourself and in your abilities. A pretty simple, basic, general understanding of the word. Belief in yourself and your abilities. Transpersonal means beyond the person or beyond the mask. It has the connotation of spirituality, beyond the physical. So it's transpersonal, and yet it still encompasses the personal. It's just not the physical. So what I mean by transpersonal self-confidence is really looking at the bigger picture, seeing yourself on a higher level, a higher spiritual level, is what I'm going to use for the meaning for this, a broader view of yourself and your rightful place among the collective consciousness and universal community. And so what I'm going to do in the next few minutes is talk about 10 or so different points that will help you to enhance and improve your self-confidence, all within the context of transpersonal or seeing a bigger picture. But there will be many practical points in here. In fact, that's what most of it is. But it will help you to enhance your self-confidence. So I'm going to start going through these points, and then I'm going to tie it all together at the end. And again, if you have questions, type them in the chat room, and I will check that every now and then and get those answered. So let's talk about point number one on how to achieve transpersonal self-confidence. This point number one is the most important, and I could fit everything else within this one thing in the first point. First point simply is accept yourself unconditionally. And you've heard me talk about this many times. Accept yourself unconditionally. We're talking about self-acceptance. Those of you familiar with the Life Leadership Paragon will know this is the first of the three points, which creates self-completeness. Accept yourself unconditionally. Don't take yourself too seriously. Have realistic expectations of yourself. And here's a big one. Don't compare yourself to others. This is a big one. Think about self-confidence for a moment. Think about your self-confidence. In those times when we don't feel confident about ourselves, I'll bet you, if you think about it, it's usually because you're comparing yourself to somebody else. Forget about other people's standards. And, you know, everything started as a thought in the mind of one individual human being, a person just like you. You know, live your own path, create your own truth, do not compare yourself to others. That little tidbit right there probably will go a long ways to help you to improve your self-confidence. It's about you, and I'm not talking in a selfish sense. I'm just talking about when it comes to self-confidence. You're entitled to the same good things in life, same as anyone else, no more, no less. You also have to view mistakes properly, and you have to have a proper view of perfection. Now, if you've listened to me for any length of time, you will know about the perfection thing. The question is, are you perfect? Now, if you've heard this before, you'd better be saying hell yes. If you haven't heard it before, I'll tell you why you should be saying hell yes. A lot of people, when I ask that question, they just, you know, they they go quiet. They, wow. And they usually will come back, no, I'm not perfect. Nobody's perfect. And I say, well, I'm perfect. How come you're not? Well, nobody is. Well, I beg to differ. I'm perfect. How come you're not? And I press them. They usually get around to saying, because I make mistakes. And so then I explain, well, you know, interesting thing about mistakes, they are an inherent part of the human species. You cannot remove mistakes from the human. Otherwise, you wouldn't have a human. Mistakes are not a bad thing. They are a good thing. That is how we pay the tuition for experience. Mistakes, they're part of who we are. They're not bad. They're good. So what do you do when you make a mistake? You learn the lesson. You make amends if necessary, and you move forward guilt-free. It's real simple. That whole concept of perfection is a fantasy. It's an ancient belief system designed to control and manipulate through guilt and shame. It's there to control you. And you don't need to buy into that anymore. You don't need to buy into it anymore. Are you perfect? Well, let me tell you about perfect people. Perfect people don't think they're any better or any worse than anyone else. Perfect people are trying to strive to be better tomorrow than they were yesterday. Perfect people are perfectly themselves, and they're getting better every single day. So, are you perfect? Yes, you are. And you ought to be saying hell yes. And every now and then I come across somebody who's never heard it before, and their automatic response is hell yes. Duh, of course I'm perfect. There is a question that I will read on this from the chat room. Do not compare yourself to others, but can we not also look to others as examples and something that we may wish to strive for? Absolutely. You know, if you look, you might know somebody that you want to emulate. You like the qualities they possess. There's nothing wrong with them. It's not so much that you're trying to be like them. At least that shouldn't be the motivation. The motivation should be, you know, I like that core value that they have. I like that, the way they do this, and I want to own it myself. So you bring it into your core values, and that's perfectly fine. But to, you know, to want to emulate somebody so you can be like them, well, now we have an identity issue, which I'm going to be talking about in just a few minutes. So you want to enhance your self-confidence? Well, how better than to just understand that you are perfect, and the only way a human being can be perfect, you're perfectly yourself. You know, there's nobody like you. And a lot of we've all heard that a lot of times, and I think it just loses its meaning. You know, the fact is there is nobody else like you. There never has been anybody else like you. There never will be anybody like you. Talk about unique. That is what we can all claim. Isn't that wonderful? There is nobody, nor has been anybody, nor will be anybody just like you. Boost your confidence. You're the one and only. You're perfectly yourself. Nobody can be more perfect at being you than you are. So view perfection properly. I've gone through this with certain individuals who are in a state of denial. And it's interesting. It's an interesting psychological study, actually. Doesn't matter how much I reason with them, they cannot accept their own perfection because of being in huge denial and being owned by previous unhealthy baggage. So if you are having a hard time ascribing to this whole perfection thing, you need to look within. You know, it's not just a belief system, it's logical. And you need to really consider that. Another aspect of accepting yourself unconditionally, change your inner voice. You know that self-talk? When you discover yourself putting yourself down, change the channel. Cancel, something like that. Another variation of this is to reframe it into something more positive. Reframe your negative self-talk. So what's an example? Oh, let's see, man. An example of this. Oh, I can never come up with examples. They're so hard. Okay, there's an example right there. Think about that for a moment logically. Coming up with an example of trying to reframe that I can't come up with an example. Well, I'm trying to draw from the entire universe. That's hard. But you know what? And here's the thing that should be said to oneself now. Anytime I have an issue within a context, I can always reframe that thing. But trying to draw from the universe, hey, that's hard for anybody. So I generally do really well at reframing, but it's within context. So if you're running cruising along in life and you make a mistake, well, isn't that just like me to make a mistake, to screw things up? That's the kind of negative self-talk you want to reframe. You know what? I'm perfectly human. I'm perfectly myself, and I have lessons to learn. And this was a lesson that I needed to learn. So I learned the lesson, and I move on. More experienced, more knowledgeable, and more better, if that's an expression. That's how you reframe. Okay, so you have to accept yourself unconditionally. I can't tell you how critical that is. If you don't accept yourself, then everything else I have to say in this show and outside of this show, in the courses, everywhere, is moot. If you can't accept yourself, you will not be successful, as you could be, at anything that you try to do. So you got to accept yourself. Second point, accept responsibility for yourself. Now, interesting twist here. You have a responsibility to yourself to think well of yourself, to hold yourself in high regard. You have a responsibility to not compare yourself with others. You have a responsibility to seek all the good that is yours due to your humanness. It's your human right. So take responsibility for yourself. Take responsibility for regarding yourself highly, to think well of yourself, to be confident. Third point, respect other people. Respect free will. Human differences are inevitable. It's just the way it is. That's life. It'll never change. We are all different people. We have different perspectives. We have different likes and dislikes. We have different tastes and so on and so forth. We have to accept people for who they are, not what they believe. We can't be judgmental. Doesn't mean that there are not better ways to, you know, we can't bring up better ways, better alternatives, because I do that all the time. But people are people, and we have to accept them for who they are. This will help you with your self-confidence, because you're not being judgmental. That's a negative, being judgmental. Understand the law of control. You cannot control or change others. Stop trying. Do not give unsolicited advice. You've heard me preach about that a lot of times, and I use the term preach loosely. You've heard me talk about that a lot of times. Don't try to change or control others, and don't give unsolicited advice. Have realistic expectations of others as well. Have them of yourself, but also have them of others. Do not consider yourself to be better or worse than anyone else. That means you don't put somebody else on high above you. Don't take yourself too seriously. I've mentioned that one before. Well, that's another huge one. How many of us take ourselves way too seriously? A lot of us do. A lot of us do. Respect other people's rights and boundaries. Don't take advantage of them. Otherwise, you feel bad about yourself. And here's another good one. Rejoice in others' successes. If somebody has a win or does a good or gets a nice, be happy for them and with them. Not jealous of that. Be happy for them, because your time will come too. All right, there's a comment in the chat room regarding mistakes. It's hard when you make a mistake because even though you may learn from your mistakes, others may not be able to move past it and always hold on to the memory of your mistakes. That is very true. Some people will do that. And when that happens for you, if you have learned that lesson and moved on and they haven't, then you move on without them. You move on without them, regardless of who it is. And yes, I mean regardless of who it is. They have their own lessons to learn. And when they come around, when they grow, when they become more mature, emotionally mature, they will understand that everybody makes mistakes. I'm looking at the chat room real quick. One comment, Kathy, I think the best way that we can give advice is by showing examples of how we live rather than suggestions to other people how they should live. And that's a good point, you know. All right, respect other people is the third point. The fourth point is be complete within yourself. This really strikes at the heart of self-confidence. If you are complete within yourself, then you don't, quote, need anybody else to complete you. Self-completeness describes and embodies a person who is healthy, stable, sensible, positive, productive, and self-possessed. They feel comfortable in their own skin. Is that not another way of talking about self-confidence? You know, with self-completeness comes a strong sense of self, a healthy self-concept, a healthy self-esteem, and the ability to stand on one's own two feet. You know, people who are complete within themselves know who they are, and they know why they are who they are. That means that the core values they possess are there by intention, not by default. They've chosen their core values. They've chosen how they want to be, and then they pursue that. Again, they don't need, quote-unquote, anyone else to complete them because they're complete within themselves. They know their principles, and they live them fully. And so that's good advice. Know your principles. Live your principles. Be complete within yourself. The fifth point, carry yourself well. Make the most of your appearance. You know, that means good posture. Stand tall. You can tell a lot about a person just by their posture. And if you think about it for a moment, anytime somebody's down, they tend to be hunched over a little bit. They tend to be drooping down, so to speak. And when they feel good, they stand up tall, erect. So make sure you have good posture. Stand tall. Be tall. Be 30 feet tall in your mind. Another point, dress well. Look sharp. Do the best you can. Have good hygiene. You know, shower every day. Brush your teeth. Comb your hair. Look, you know, look the best you can look. And do it not for other people, but you guessed it. Do it for you, because that's just who you are. Another couple of things. Walk faster with direction. I'll tell you a couple of examples here in just a minute with that, but it reminds me of something when I used to do seminars regularly. But walk faster. You know, if you're going somewhere, walk with direction. Walk with purpose. You know, go after it, because that kind of sets a subliminal or subconscious precedent, if you will. It kind of sets the mood, sets the way you are. It's confident. Another point is smile and make direct eye contact. I can never talk to somebody and consider them to be self-confident people when they won't look me in the eye. And I know you've experienced the same thing. When somebody won't look you in the eye, how can you say they're really very self-confident? Yet a self-confident person will look you in the eye, and they will speak to you directly. And they smile, too. So smile. Sixth point, have a positive outlook and engage in positive behavior. Just as happiness is where you see it, it's also true with self-confidence. You need to look for that in yourself. Don't focus on the negatives of other people or the negatives of the world. There's plenty of negatives to go around. Why focus on that stuff? It's always been around, and it will probably be around for a long, long time. There will always be negatives. You don't need to focus on that stuff. That's why I don't read the paper and I don't watch the news. Why would I want to do that? You know, what's going on today? Same stuff that was going on a year ago, 10 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. It's the same stuff. Different day, different week, different year. Don't focus on negative things because it debilitates one's spirit. It really does. You don't need to be oblivious to what's going on. If it's something really important, you'll find out about it. You'll hear about it. Be realistic. And this next point is the same thing as we just talked about. Be realistic. Things are better now than they ever have been, as far as I'm concerned. You know, they're not getting worse. So many people, so many doomsdayers will tell you, oh, yeah, the world's going to hell. Things are getting worse. Things are getting so bad. No, they're not. They're getting better. The world's gotten smaller because of our communications ability, but things have always gone on. And they're just different. Same stuff, different era. Same stuff. And yes, we now possess the ability to blow up the world. Fine. But, you know, I think we're over the hump. That's my personal opinion. And I'm going to stick with it because if I didn't think that, I would have to focus on the negative. And I'm not going to do that. I have no reason for it. Compliment and praise other people. Be positive with them, too. Don't gossip. Remember that. Do no harm and do right. So compliment and praise other people. Make positive contributions to the world in whatever way that you do, that you can. Whenever you attend functions, like a seminar, for example, sit in the front row. And this is the story I was mentioning just a moment ago that reminded me when I was doing seminars. You know, I could always tell the self-confident people. You know what they did? They were there early. And I don't mean too early. They were there early. And you know where they made a beeline for? The front row. And it was great. It was refreshing. And there was only a handful in any one seminar. But they made a beeline for the front row. They weren't afraid. They know who they were. They weren't afraid. You know. And most everybody went to the back row. In fact, you couldn't fill the whole place. They always fill up from the back forward. Because, you know, they don't want to be noticed. If I'm sitting in the back, I'm not noticed. He won't call on me. He won't, you know, point me out. You know, that ain't self-confident. And it was tough to see. You know, I looked at those people. I mean, sometimes, depending on the size of the seminar and the size of the meeting room, you know, there might be two or three or four empty rows in front of me before people, before I got to people. And you know what I did with those? I removed those front rows. So the people who were sitting in the middle, who were kind of halfway, they were now in the front row. Sorry, but I'm not going to speak to three or four or five empty front rows. Ain't going to happen, not in my seminar. So make a beeline for the front row. Speak up assertively. Speak deliberately, forthrightly, and loud enough to be heard. You know, speak with confidence. And if you really want to learn how to be confident in public, learn how to speak in public. And a lot of people, oh, no, I don't want to do that. Why not? You know, what's so bad about it? Well, I'm so nervous. Well, that's because you're focusing on you. Focus on your audience. It's not about you. It's about them. What do you have inside that you're going to teach them? What are you going to tell them? It's about them, not about you. And I understand there's always a few nerves to go along with any type of public speaking unless you do it all the time. Once you do it all the time, oh, man, it's nothing. You do it in your sleep. So the last little sub-point on this point number six, having a positive outlook and engaging in positive behavior, is act positive. Act confident. I love the expression I heard from Zig Ziglar many years ago. He said, we do not sing because we are happy. We are happy because we sing. In other words, action. Take action. Action brings results. All right, Camille. Good. Point number seven. Have a life purpose and be passionate about doing it. You know, where's your passion? Do you feel it? Do you feel that passion within you? Be passionate. What's your purpose? What's your mission? Whatever that is, be about it. And if you don't know what it is, you can find out by answering the simple question that's very difficult to answer. What do you call a good day? When you've answered that question, you'll be well on your way to knowing your life's purpose. And then be about it. Be passionate. You know, this is what I tell my students. I don't want to I don't want you to regurgitate what I've written. Yes, you need to answer the questions, but I want to see what's inside you. I want to hear what's inside you. Show me you. You know, can Eddie come out to play? That's what I tell him by name. You know, will you come out? I want to see you. I don't want to see something that I can see anywhere. I want to see what's unique and special about you. Have a life purpose. Be passionate about doing it. Number 8, increase your knowledge, your skills, and your competence. Nothing will help your self-confidence like knowing what you're doing. So gain the knowledge. Commit to personal growth, to continuing education, to lifelong education. The more you know, the more confident you are. Be eclectic. Learn about many things. That's one of the things that inspired me when I was late teens. And that was like Leonardo da Vinci, eclectic. Did many different things, interesting things. And I've tried to live my life that way. I'm interested in a lot of things. I've done a lot of things. I do a lot of things. And I learn a lot of things along the way. So number 8, as I mentioned, increase your knowledge, skills, and competence. Number 9, take your power back. This is like a panacea for humanity's ills. Take your power back. It'll almost cure everything. It'll cure relationship problems. It'll cure self-confidence issues. It'll cure self-esteem issues. It's because it's about accepting yourself. Take your power back. You know, I don't want to hear all the reasons why you can't do something. I want to hear all the reasons why you can do it. Never say, oh, that's too hard. Always ask, how hard can it be? This is the kind of confidence that you have to have. If you're going to do stuff, then by God, do it. If you're not, then do something else. You know, take your power back. Be who you are. Pat yourself on the back for being who you are. Be perfectly you. 10, last point, kind of, that I'm going to talk about, of this list anyway, is an interesting expression I picked up off of an article on the website online, and it said Photoshop your self-image. I love that. I don't know if you're familiar with Photoshop, but you know, you can morph things and change things and make tweaks and adjustments to pictures and images and like that. It was a perfect metaphor for it. You know, our mental picture affects how we view ourselves and in turn our confidence, our mental picture of us. And our self-image is not fixed, folks. We can change it. So Photoshop it. Tweak it. Adjust it. Bring in a core value that you need to bring in. Learn a lesson you need to learn. Focus on what you want, not on what you don't have. Because whatever you focus on is what you will get. If you use these tools, these 10 basic points, along with their many sub-points that I've talked about, it will help you to perform a certain thing. And it's something that I call an identity foundation shift. If you think about it, when we compare ourselves to others, are we not essentially saying, gee, I wish I was like more like him or her? We've lost our identity, essentially is what it is. To one degree or another, most people's self-worth, self-esteem, and the way they see themselves is based on how others view them and what others expect of them. And what they believe others expect of them. In other words, their self-concept and therefore their identity have been based on external expectations and validation rather than on internal expectations and validation. And even more than that, they value what others think more of them more highly than they value what they themselves think of them. In a very real sense, they are owned by these other people. They don't really have self-esteem. They have what I call them esteem. They esteem them more than they do themselves. Them esteem is simply self-worth based on what others think. So them esteem is it's external validation and expectations. But differently than them esteem is self-esteem, and I'm going to explain that too. What about you? Any of this strike a chord so far with you? Well, it's interesting how I came about this whole concept of them esteem. It's actually my wife Tracy and I kind of came up with it. But I couldn't figure out, you know, I've always been a self-confident person. But, you know, many, many years ago, well over 10 years ago now. You know, I found myself in an alcoholic marriage. I wasn't the alcoholic, but I was dealing with one. And I couldn't understand, you know, I always considered my self-esteem to be very good. And I couldn't understand why I was in the situation, because I knew that if I had a little higher regard for myself, that I would have never allowed myself to be in that type of a thing. And I couldn't wrap my mind around it, because I was self-confident. I thought I had self-esteem, and yet my situation would argue otherwise. And so what am I to make of it? Well, that's where them esteem came from, and it was so true with me. Man, I had them esteem big time, because I only felt good about Doug when I was doing what the religion said, what my family said I should do, what other people thought I should be doing. That's the only time I ever felt good about me, and I changed that. Self-esteem, or esteem, means favorable regard, and self-esteem means that someone has high regard for themselves. And I'm not talking about selfish or narcissistic. I'm talking about healthy. So, if you think about it, is there a difference between self-confidence and self-esteem? Yes, and absolutely there is. You may believe in yourself and your abilities, but your self-concept may be based on external expectations and validation rather than internal expectations and validation. So, have self-confidence. But the way to have true, transpersonal self-confidence is to have self-esteem. To accept yourself unconditionally, warts and all, as Shakespeare said. To know yourself, to know who you are, why you are who you are, to be complete within yourself. You need to shift, if this is true in your case, you need to shift those expectations from external to internal, because you have the right to be who you are. Without judgment. That doesn't mean some people won't try to judge you, but that doesn't matter. Because a person who is self-confident and who has self-esteem, accepts themselves for who they are, unconditionally, doesn't really care what other people think. What you think of me is none of my business. So you need to make sure that you are you, that your identity is yours, not somebody else's. So I hope that some of these different points will help you. If you do this, you will see the bigger picture, which is transpersonal, spiritual, because true self-confidence is a spiritual event. Hope they've helped. Appreciate your questions in the chat room. And let's see, got a couple of announcements before we wrap things up here. As I've mentioned before, the guided meditations that we have played on some of the shows are now available in the MCHS store for a few bucks donation. And I do have a question for those who are listening to the live broadcast. If they want to give me an answer in the chat room, or you can email me admin@mchschurch.org. These guided meditations, do you like having them played as part of this program on occasion? Would you like more of it, less of it? If you let me know in the chat room, then I can plan future programs accordingly. I would also like to take just a moment to send out positive thoughts and energy to those who need it, those who are having a tough time. Many people are. Maybe you are. I send you my positive energy. Please join me in doing that. Just send it on out to the universe. You know, there can never be too much of that. All right. So that pretty much wraps up my part of the program. Coming up next is Living Free with Camille Edwards. If you like what you're hearing, tell others about the show. Next week, Louis Pizarro, a doctoral candidate with IMHS, will join me to discuss ego as well as some other interesting topics. So please join us then. Also, if you'd like... Again, stay tuned.
This has been Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly. To learn more about the concepts presented in this program, visit mchschurch.com. To take a metaphysics course or to get your metaphysics degree, visit metaphysicsinstitute.com.
Power the Spirit is a production of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science, Incorporated.
And now, Living Free with Camille Edwards.
All right, so I'm obviously not Camille. Or am I? Anyway, welcome to Living Free with Camille Edwards. This is the first episode of this segment, so I am here with Camille Edwards to kind of discuss what she's going to do and get her started. Hey, Camille, welcome.
Thank you, Doug. It's good to be here again.
That sounds more like of a Camille to me. All right, so let's talk about... What you got planned? I mean, what you got planned for this segment series? Let's talk about that.
Well, for tonight's segment, of course, I'm going to talk about herbs. But in our little discussion we had the other day, we thought that maybe this segment could be about whatever I feel that it needs to be about at the time. And Living Free is exactly that. Living Free, we're going to pick and choose whatever is on my mind at the time.
Sounds good. So tell us about your background with herbology.
I am a master herbologist, or herbalist is the term that I use. And it took me 3 years of going through schooling to learn how to be a master herbalist. And it's a very intensive course of study. It's more than just opening a book and reading a few articles. It's actually taking anatomy. It's actually taking... we call it pharmacology, and there's a lot to it. It's very involved, and learning, of course, botany and horticulture, which, you know...
Sounds deep.
It was deep. Now, how much of it I actually remember on a regular basis, we'll find out.
Well, yeah, I guess we'll find out tonight, too, huh?
Yeah.
All right, so yeah. What do you got for us tonight? I'll let you get right into it.
For tonight, we're going to talk about the herbalist herb of choice, the number one herb that herbalists prefer, and that is cayenne pepper.
Cool. Cayenne. Actually, it's more hot than cool.
Yeah, it's exactly. And I'm going to just spend a few minutes talking about cayenne pepper and all the benefits of that wonderful, wonderful piece of food.
Sounds great. Go for it.
Sure. Okay. Well, let me start out on this note. When you think of cayenne pepper, what do you usually think of? I mean, do you think medicine? It's just recently here that we've started hearing on TV advertisement about capsaicin is the actual pronunciation. And you're now starting to hear about it being in rubs for arthritis and deep heating products or products along those nature. Well, herbalists have known this for hundreds and hundreds of years, that if you want to soothe an aching joint, cayenne pepper. And we use it in the form of salves, tinctures, powder, and we even drink it, and I'll get into that in just a moment. But, you know, most people, when they think cayenne pepper, they think, oh, buffalo wings, you know. But do you think first aid? No. And we use cayenne pepper for first aid. It's just amazing what it can do. And honestly, no herbalist worth their grain of salt would ever be caught without their cayenne pepper. So here are some of the things that cayenne pepper is good for. And I have my little list right here. It's good as a stimulant. Tonic, a rubefacient, that means it brings blood to the skin. An alterative, which is a cleansing mechanism. Antispasmatic, emetic, it can make you vomit if you take enough of it. Antiseptic, and we all know it as a condiment. Anti-rheumatic, and it regulates the flow of blood. And that's for if you have high blood pressure or if you have low blood pressure. It's a stimulant, and it's going to know what to do once it gets in there and what your needs are at the time. And as I mentioned earlier, it's an excellent first aid tool. And some of the things scientifically proven, now this is scientifically proven, it kills prostate cancer cells. Now this is very important for you guys. It removes plaque buildup in the heart. This is men and women. Works on hemorrhoids when combined with fiber in your diet. And I know some people are saying, oh, no, no way. But trust me.
It burns them up.
It burns them up, basically. But we can do it in increments and make it less painful. Works on overall heart health. And as a stimulus, it will either increase or decrease the blood pressure, as I noted earlier. And it works on stomach ulcers. Now, one little warning I have to give you that is that as an herbalist, I am not a medical professional. So anytime you start taking a new herb or supplement, I should say, always consult with your doctor first. It's not the intent of MCHS Network to prescribe, treat, dose, or give you any medical advice with what I'm telling you tonight. So please, please educate yourself before you do anything. And Catherine, I'm talking about it both internally and externally. Now, just a few little things that as an herbalist I was taught is that you can actually, and don't go out and do this until you read up more on this, is with a light dose of cayenne pepper, you can actually use it as an eye wash at times of infection in the eyes. And I must admit, when I do my tinctures with cayenne, I have rubbed my eyes, and I survived. It did not damage my eyes. It did not burn me. But, man, it was painful at the moment. But when you dilute it in the warm water and you wash your eyes, it's not that painful. And it's basically I can't say enough good things about cayenne pepper. And Dr. Christopher taught us this one thing in class, and that was – He had never lost a heart patient when he was called in. He was an herbalist. He would be called to the house of a person having a heart attack, and the first thing he would give them was a quarter teaspoon of cayenne powder, and it's mixed in about 3 to 4 ounces of warm water. Stir that up and have that person drink that water. Now, what's the first thing that person's going to do when they drink water with cayenne pepper in it?
Hurl.
They're going to cough. They're, you know, hurl or whatever. They're going to cough. They're going to try. In other words, it's going to make them move their chest, make their heart jump. And it's going to do what it needs to do to keep that heart pumping. It's more, I can't scientifically say it's more than taking a bare aspirin, but it's right up there, I tell you. And he, in all his years of being a doctor who called, he never lost a patient, heart patient, when he gave them cayenne pepper. And it did shock them back to life. You're right. And the same thing if you have someone who is suffering from hypothermia. I keep cayenne tincture here at the house. Just drop a few drops on their tongue, and it will instantly start to warm them up. It's amazing. And if someone is bleeding, both internally or externally, if you have cayenne pepper powder, throw it into the wound. And what it does, it clots that bleeding up. It hurts like hell, but it clots that bleeding up, and it really is an effective weapon to use if you're out in the middle of nowhere, you're near the house, but you don't have anything other than that cayenne powder in front of you. And it stops the bleeding. And one of the things I have to tell you a story about is so funny. My daughter had just brought home a new boyfriend, but one of his little problems was that he had chronic nosebleeds, and he would lose a lot of blood. And one day he was at the house with us, and his nose started to bleed. And I was a brand new herbalist at the time, so it was like, oh, is this going to really work? What do I do? So I said, here, Rob. And I gave him, instead of giving him only a quarter of a teaspoon of powdered pepper, I gave him a tablespoon of powdered pepper and 3 ounces of warm water. And I said, Rob, I need you to snort this up your nose. And I gave him a straw. Well, a young
the
bully.
The newest craze, forget cocaine, it's now cayenne.
Exactly. And, a young boy doesn't know how to delicately snort. So what he did, he just basically inhaled that entire cup up both nostrils. And the next thing I know, he drops to the ground. He's rolling. He's yelling. He's got his hand covering his face. And he was curled up in a fetal position, rolling back and forth. And when I get nervous, I start laughing. I was doing this little nervous titter, and I'm going, oh, my God, I just killed my daughter's boyfriend. What am I going to do? And he finally, about 10, 15 minutes later, he stands up. Well, the bleeding had stopped. And since then, he has not had any bad nosebleeds, and it's been a little over 3 years now. So I know it works. It worked on that. But he said that was one of the worst sensations he had ever gone through, and he actually got high after the process from it, because you actually get a high from very hot, hot foods like that. And he said he went from extreme pain to being very high. So, you know, there was
something. I don't even know what to say about that.
But
okay,
I thought
after the show, we'll all be snorting cayenne.
I hope not. But the other thing is, if you have a bleeding ulcer, and like I said, please, please remember, I'm not a medical doctor. It has been known that cayenne pepper can cure bleeding ulcers. So it's just amazing. Yeah, poor Rob. Honestly, Cheryl knows Rob. It was bad. It was really bad. And I had a friend, Janice. She's not with us tonight, but she sliced her hand open. And I didn't have powder, but I had the the peppers flakes. Mm-hmm. And I just packed that cut full. And it did stop. But Janice is the person you will never hear say a cuss word. But I swear, I never knew that she could cuss on that level. So it is a painful process at first. And if you're going to start taking cayenne internally, you start on a small scale if you're very sensitive. Here at our house, it's amazing how much cayenne we eat. But started at about 30,000 SHUs, which is the Scoville heating unit. And then you can work your way up to 50,000 units a day. And it's just really amazing. What is the ingredient in the pepper that stops the bleeding? You know, that's a good question, and I can't remember at the moment. But a lot of your herbs in powder form will also stop the bleeding. But I will find out the answer to that question and let you know, Catherine. I promise you that. But it's just an amazing, amazing thing to keep on hand. Just always remember to keep powdered cayenne in your cabinet. And we eat a lot of peppers. In fact, tonight when I walked out into the kitchen, the boys were making fresh cayenne pepper sauce, and we mix it with jalapenos and cayennes, and we're pretty healthy around here stomach wise there's nothing left in our stomachs. So it's just a wonderful thing. And like I said, any herbalist worth their weight in gold will have cayenne on hand. So any questions?
There was one question from Kathy earlier on, do you have any suggestion on something for aching muscles?
Yeah, cayenne rub and cayenne salve with rub, or you can make an ointment with cayenne. And it brings the blood to the surface, and it makes that area heat up. So it's a natural heating process. And you can now, unfortunately, buy some products on the over-the-counter that have capsaicin in it, but nothing beats the real thing. And it's real simple to make your own herbal products. Very simple thing to do. So it is being a herbalist, the first thing I was introduced with cayenne pepper, and I was just amazed. I was just amazed at what it could do for you. And I take my cayenne pepper every day, folks.
And well, interesting stuff, Camille.
That's right.
So you'll have something new for us next week.
Next week I'll have something new. If somebody wants something to be discussed, you just send an email here. Let's see, Doug, you said the email was camille.edwards@mchschurch.org. .org, okay. Catherine says, how do you make it? Well, the salve is made, believe it or not, with beeswax. And you have to make an oil from the pepper. It's a little process, and hopefully in the future I'll be able to share all that with you. But it's a very simple thing to do, but it takes 2 to 3 weeks to effectively make it. What you buy in the supermarkets is made in less than a one-hour period usually, and it's not as strong and as effective as when you make your own. But it's beeswax that is the foundation of the salve. Beeswax and probably olive oil.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to another installment next week.
That's right. I hope so. And like I said, if you have any topic you want me to talk about when it comes to herbs, feel free to send that email. And I just saw that he's too scared to have another nosebleed. That's funny. Yeah, he's terrified of that one. But no, Catherine, it won't burn your skin unless you have a sensitivity to it. Now, and that's where you need to do a little skin test before you apply any product. And I would say do it on the inside of your wrist, just like when you would check the baby bottle before giving a baby a bottle. Just check a little spot there first before you use it, because you never know who's sensitive and who's not. But cayenne pepper, about the only time it's been known to cause any problems is when people take too much of it and they go into shock. And if you're allergic to it, then, of course, you can have a problem with it. So that's why you need to do that little skin test before you rub it all over the place. So.
All right. Well, thanks, Camille.
Sure,
look forward
sure.
To next week's installment.
Yep, and I look forward to coming back.
All right.
And thank you for having me.
Thanks. Have a great night.
You too. Good night.
Tune in next week for another interesting topic on Living Free with Camille Edwards. MCHS does not intend to prescribe, recommend, or otherwise treat illnesses or afflictions. If you're ill, please see your medical practitioner for a diagnosis and any medicinal prescriptions, doses, or treatments. It's been reported that some herbs may interfere with surgery. If you're currently on any medication or herbal products, please advise your doctor or dentist at first point of contact.
This is the MCHS Educational Network. Please visit us at mchschurch.org. This is Dr. Vicky's Psychic Perspective on the MCHS Educational Network. And now, Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, good evening, everyone. Sorry about that. Another Sunday evening of really interesting stuff. You are now listening to Dr. Vicki's Psychic Perspective. You can phone in. You can ask questions in the chat. We are here for you, any questions you might have. Tonight, I was thinking about talking about decision dilemmas and when to use your intuition, how to use your instincts, what's the difference, and, you know, things that, different ways of thinking that help us make good decisions, of course, in keeping with the do no harm, do right. So this isn't always an easy one either, because we're making decisions every day. within 5 minutes, you've made three decisions, whether it's to go to the fridge, you know, put that jacket on, go outside, which to do first. We're always making decisions. The brain is working all the time. So what kinds of decisions that we're kind of talking about are the life dilemma decisions. Oh, geez, do I send my child to school? You know, at what age, what school do I send my child to? Do I take that other job? Do I quit this job? You know, how is this relationship working? How do I make a decision about that? You know, everyone has what I call a decision dilemma every day, every week, and every month. So if you have a decision dilemma, and you'd like to maybe expand a little bit on the thinking process, you know, incorporate a few other things, please feel free, call in, write in, and we'll do our best to address those things. And of course, I'm going to ask Doug Kelly to help out, because I'm not as good at reading the chat and thinking to speak at the same time. I just can't think ten things at once anymore. So
well,
that's...
you're blonde.
That's true. You know, it's I used to be able to. Doug and I talked about this the other day, that I think it has to do with comfort. You know, we get a little bit older, a little more relaxed. Certain things aren't as important as they used to be. And we have a zillion more files in our brains.
Like, no, I'm just... blonde too. And
we all have our moments. So, again, if anybody has any questions, please give a call and write in. So, one of the things that I find is a very common dilemma is, in particular, with job decisions and moving decisions. And I tell you what, these are the two biggest traumas for people next to experiencing a death. Because it uproots all of what is familiar to you in your life. So it's can be very stressful. Now, there's a little process that I go through and I like to share with people. First of all, what's your gut feeling? What is your intuition say? And we're going to talk about that in a minute. But the other is, how does it improve your life? And that's a huge one. You know, who are you? What do you want? Does this step improve your life? The next thing is, how does it affect the people in your life? This could be your family, if you're raising young children, if you have a partner who's committed to a job. Any number of these things factor in to how you make a decision. But the first one, let's go back to the first one, is that sense. Everybody has a sense, a sensory perception, that feeling, that you know, usually it's just that overwhelming, I have to go there. I really have to have this. So, okay, if you're in a positive to say, I'm going to make this change, then the brain and the rest of, you know, the elements in your life will start to factor in the logistics. What does happen very often, though, with folks, and I've done it myself, is your sense says, okay, this is the right thing to do. I'm going forward. But then you look at the logistics and you're saying, what? Am I out of my mind? But if your sense is strong enough, everything does fall into place. It really does. I found that if things are too difficult and they do not fall into place, it's usually because you ought not to be doing it. And I have this general rule. If you attempt something three times, or if I attempt it three times, and it's just too difficult and not working, that's a good sign. That's a good sign that maybe there's something different I have to look at. So I have to shift my thinking over, and maybe I have to drop it all together because the timing isn't right. Maybe my intuition is right, but the timing is off. Because this is what happens. We want things quickly. And if we don't get that immediate result, that immediate sign, that immediate return, then we give up. And that's not the way life works. It's a process. Everything does take its time. So it's a step-by-step thing. So if you see your goal and you know that that's where you're working toward, everything ought to start to fall into place. Now, it's not to say there won't be challenges. There's always challenges. But if anybody wants something bad enough, and that's what you're focused on, you're going to go for it. You know, especially when you're young, and everybody can relate to this, you're going out to with your friends, or let's say you have a date. You will go through snowstorms, rainstorms. You will go through amazing things to get to where you want to go because it's that important to you. Now, as you're older, you think nothing's that important to go through a snowstorm for. And you see your whole thinking changes. But you can remember what it is, that feeling of, I am going there. I'm going forward and I am going over there. And you take the steps to get there. Now, because I have a particular sensitivity to nature, you know, and the critters and the weather and the air and such, I always get a sign. I always get various things that happen in my life, and because I'm very observant about these things. So I watch for these things around me that support the thinking or is telling me something that I hadn't tuned into already. But just as a really silly thing, I know that there's going to be a change when we run out of toilet paper. I know that sounds kind of bonkers, but my daughter says to me the other night on the phone, Mom, you know how you are with your toilet paper stuff? If you run out of toilet paper, there's going to be a big change. I said, yeah. She goes, well, I'm that way with baseboards. If I have this urge to clean baseboards, it means there's a big change coming. And I thought, now, isn't that observant? You know, if somebody who observes the patterns or events in your life and relates one thing to another, we start to see that there are signs. Now, the toilet paper thing's not for everybody. That's just my thing, and I don't know why it is, but I have this thing about always keeping, you know, and you do that in a house full of people, too, and I never got over that habit when everybody grew up, got married, and so on. So you have
like cases of toilet paper stocked in your closet.
You know, I usually get the big double rolls and the big things there, Doug. because I live in the country, I got to tell you though, I do stock up on things so that I don't have to run to the store. So if I find out, oh my God, I'm down to a roll of toilet paper, holy, I know that something big is going to come. So, you know, it's like this it's going to be changing.
You don't go get more toilet paper.
That's why I always keep it, especially for clients, you know.
Doomsday Sayer. That does spell the end of the world.
That's true. I also keep cases of Kleenex because I have clients and you know, you can never have enough Kleenex. But so everybody has their own little sign. Everybody has signs. And as odd as this is, too, it might sound to people, in all the times that I have moved in my life, an owl has always appeared within 6 months prior to the move. And just not too long ago, just the other day, I let the dogs out in the morning, and there's this whoo-hoo. And there was this owl just about 50 feet from my door. I said, hey, where have you been? And then it just and flew away. So I know that these things might be odd to some people, but if you're observant, there are these signs. There are signs everywhere that, and maybe they're built into superstitions, and maybe it's, you know, but if it belongs to you, and it's not to say you want to create them either, because there is this notion that we can create things. But there are signs that things are good for us, and signs that things are not good for us. So this is what to watch for in, coexisting with energy, coexisting with life. And I'm a real big supporter of that. I mean, I ask people, have you had any glitches in your process? Are there things in your way? Are there things that are preventing you from moving forward? And what are they? Because those are signs. And maybe it's just about changing the thinking or moving over. So again, there's that intuition, that intuitive feeling, and then how to step forward and be ready and prepared, step by step by step. Now, Catherine, I can see in the chat room, just said, I have found that for myself, my intuition comes in the form of a visualization. Like I can see things as they will be, and they always end up that way. that's a perfect example of being somewhat visionary. You have an intuitive sense, but it comes in a visual. And you have a little flash, and I call it, sometimes it happens for me, in a Kodak moment, where it's a very brief glimmer, and I get this picture, and I go, oh, okay. And so that's a good one. That's a very good example, Catherine, of staying in tune with your intuition. Now, which is very different, by the way, than instinct. Instinct is a physical radar. We all have that physical radar that says run or fight. And that's it's just that element in the human makeup. So if you have an instinct to, oh, no, can't stay here, or an instinct to, oh, I better get in my car and go, then you follow those. And I don't necessarily think all the time that that's an intuition, although some people might argue it. To me, that's just a good instinct. Remember, I call ESP those physical sensory perceptions that are quite explainable. They're very logical, sensible. We all have that third eye that's able to read energy. And so use your instincts about when to maneuver, when to make a phone call, when to, and those are, that's just sharp instincts. Use your intuition, and but very often, I know that I have to make a phone call, but I say, oh, today's not a good day. That could very well be a combination of an ESP / instinct and an intuition. My instincts might say, you know what, my energy's not good at this moment to have a discussion, or I don't feel like it's going to be received very well. And then my intuition will kick in and say, I think maybe I can do that tomorrow. So then I'll wake up to the next day and say, oh, is this the day to make that phone call? So how we make those decisions. Now, it's very important to take an inventory when you want to make a decision for your life that's life-changing. Remember that it affects everyone. Everyone around you is influenced by that decision. I am not saying you should not honor yourself, but I am saying we must honor our responsibilities to ourselves and those in our lives. So if you're, let's just give an example of, you know, a parent has children at home, but the parent says, oh, I suddenly want to do this. You can't bail on your children. That's a responsibility. So I'm not saying that you need to be committed in ways that hinders you, but I am saying that we have to be insightful to know how our decisions affect other people. It's a very good policy to inform other people what you're thinking and inform other people what steps that you would like to take, so you can get support with that. I find that a lot of people tend to withhold information, you know, out of fear of being judged, criticized, or somebody wants to put them down. But if you're owning your truth and, you know, you put it out there, then you're going to get that energy that can support you forward and just ignore the other difficult stuff. Not only that, you also find out who's in support of your changes and who is not. You know, as a friend of mine says, you're only as good as the flock you fly with. So that's a really important consideration. When you're going to make changes, you want to improve your life. You want it to move forward. You want to build your life. So you're going to do the same thing for others as you're moving forward. When you're making decisions for other people, now this is where it can get a little bit tricky. If you're looking after children or you're looking after aged people, and there's very big decisions, life-altering decisions, there's a lot of considerations to make. But I really believe that if you're tapped into your intuition, you have a good sense of what direction to go in. You have a good sense of how to move forward and then take into consideration all the information and the other events that you have to challenge, that are challenging you or you might have to challenge. So it could be somebody in the hospital and you have a really strong sense that they need a particular care that involves a different medication. Well, follow that intuition, but now gather the information and ask the questions. So these are decisions that you have to make, but you have to follow the intuition. Intuition is critical. It's a critical part to our construction. I think it's the most natural thing that we have. It's more natural than thinking. Thinking is conditioned, but intuition is natural. It's free-flowing if we allow it to be a part of our everyday life. So very important to keep all these things in the decision-making process. So Catherine has another question. What would you say defines the difference between instinct and intuition? I think I've pretty much covered that. I hope I have for you, Catherine. Instinct is a physical thing. Intuition is non-explainable. It's that energy sense that we have. She also adds, my thoughts are that instinct comes from knowledge of the past. Intuition comes from no experience. That is one way to look at it. That instinct is in any educational psychiatry or generalized psychology, instinct is that part of our brain that's the animal side of our brain, fight or flight. It's how we are like the animal kingdom, fight or flight. When you're talking about knowledge that comes from the past, that's conditioning. So we have a conditioned response, like we have a familiarity with something that causes us to behave a certain way. That kind of conditioning can be changed. Instinct, if we're talking about true instinct, is that part of us that knows danger, the part of us that knows which street to walk down. It's instinct, instinctual. Now, Camille has made a comment here. A person who does not follow their intuition, are they a person without the common sense factor? Ooh, that's a big one, Camille. I love those big questions. The common sense factor, I have an issue with terminologies. It's a thing with me. Common sense, I don't like the common sense because it just refers to the sensibilities that are presently common in the society. So it's very misleading. It's a very misleading thing. Universal sense and natural senses. Now, that's my forte. I love talking about that. The natural sensibility it's just kind of like if you put your hand on a hot stove, you're going to get burned. That's a pretty natural sensibility. But take that into everyday life in the bigger things, and people have lost a sensibility. Intuition is a natural part of our experience. But you don't have to have a strong intuition to be sensible, to have a natural sensibility. Not everybody is psychic to a great degree. Not everybody is intuitive to a high degree. That doesn't mean they can't use good sensibilities. So I think sensibility, if we're going to talk about universal sensibility or natural sensibility, would just be in what I call like a free flow, something that flows. It just makes sense. like 1 + 1 = 2. It's just something that makes sense. Very often, there's behaviors of people that, it feels like you're jumping around the alphabet and there's no order to it. So the belief system or the thinking patterns are a little bit disjointed, and it doesn't make sense. We find ourselves having to ask a lot of questions to get to the point. So somebody who doesn't follow their intuition, are they someone without common sense? Yes and no. I have to, if you have a really good intuition and you're not following it, then you're not going to have good sensibility, and vice versa. So Jericho says, his intuition is more active, like my intuition to be more active, where awake or in conscious, most of it in precognition. That's, sorry, it's a little bit disjointed here, Jericho. I guess you're going to have to rephrase that for me so I understand it. Doug, did you understand that question?
No, I'm going to have to ask him to rephrase it too.
Okay.
Not sure.
Sorry about that, Jericho. It's I'm not quite sure. I think you're trying to say how your intuition works in your precognition. And if you could just explain that a little bit better, then we can certainly discuss that further. Everybody has, again, different senses that activate. You might be more visual, you might be more auditory, you might just, your nervous system acts up when you get a good feeling, you know, or a bad feeling, and, you know, something in your body doesn't feel well, you know, and that hits you in the gut, you get sick to your stomach. I would say, don't go there. You know, these are things that everybody, and I take this literally, everybody has a different way of working in partnership with their sensory perceptions. So if you're self-observant, then you'll know better how to incorporate that into your decision-making. So following that, and again, setting your goal and moving forward. If there is a dilemma, then you have to watch for the signs and weigh out the bigger picture. And take your time, because anything too hasty usually doesn't have a good result. That's very different than spontaneity. Spontaneity is that it absolutely feels right, and you've got to act on it right now, and you go. But hasty is without all the information. To act too hastily is to not include all the other intuitive and thinking parts that just makes sense. So you've got to incorporate all the parts to make a good decision. So the other part of ESP, there is NSP, natural sensory perception, where all animals have it. Maybe that's instinct, is what Jericho is saying here. So I'm going to say that the other part of ESP is NSP, according to Jericho, natural sensory perception, where all animals have it. You know, there's a lot of debate about that, Jericho, and it's actually a really interesting topic. And it depends who you talk to be honest. I happen to think that animals are sensitive at levels we can't imagine. I always know what kind of a winter it's going to be by watching the animals. I know by how much my horses are eating, and then I check out other animals and people in other farms, are their horses eating or their livestock eating more food? Because they know something. You can watch to see how birds are flocking. That can tell you, because they have a sense of things that we just don't get. We can tune into that and get it more. But how much of an NSP, as you call it, natural sensory perception, that might be considered instinctual, there could be a relationship to that, because they're sensing something at an instinctual level that we don't know. So we might be calling it an extrasensory perception when in fact it's an instinct. We could be calling it instinct when it could be an ESP. And we just don't know that. We can speculate and, come to, as Doug would say, some, logical conclusions, some very sensible conclusions based on our observations. But we don't know. So it's how we can work better in partnership and to be observant of those things. And then it will mean what it means to you. So, Catherine's just making a quick comment. She's noticed with her dog that he starts to eat more when the cold weather's coming before it's arrived. That's exactly what I'm saying, Catherine. It's they know something we don't. We just have to observe. So this is where I get to sometimes lay back. And I mean, I get a pretty good sense of weather anyway, but I just watch the animals. And if they start acting up in a day, that could be a storm coming. Especially horses, they get very spooked in wind, very windy weather. So, these are all, again, those observations that help us make, very good, better decisions for ourselves and ultimately good decisions. So here's the thing, and I know it might just sound oversimplified, but if your dog is eating a lot and you know the cold weather's coming, cover your tomatoes. It's like, if you're wondering, when do I cover my tomatoes or pick my tomatoes? Well, your dog just told you. So that's how we are interconnected and observing all the things around us. And it's actually very exciting when we start to open our minds that way. So, again, if anybody has Any other questions? Anything that they'd like to talk about? Is there anything here that I've missed, Doug?
No, I don't think so.
No? Okay. Well, next week, I know that we have, Doug has another guest on. We have Camille back, and we will have another interesting show on Dr. Vicky's psychic perspective. You know, reinforcing what Doug has said, please send positive thoughts to people. Send positive thoughts to your family and friends and your community, and to the world in general. It helps you reinforce your own positive energy and, in turn, make better decisions. So for this week, signing off again, Dr. Vicky, Psychic Perspective. See you next week.